Hello, good morning and welcome. It's 10 o'clock Friday, the 19th of February. This is the finance show of tiptv.co.uk. I'm Zach Meir and I'm joined today by Mark Ostwald, who's strategist at ADM Investor Services. It's the end of the week, Mark. We had an exciting week, but we've tired out with all the volatility. What's your overall take?
Yes, I mean, we've had some relief for the risk assets this week. There's no doubt about it. It's been a much better week for things like cocos, for equity prices. The only problem is I don't feel that there's a lot of confidence out there. So the big risk for the end of the week is that people square their books and take the profits on any positions that they've got. We've got quite a lot of risk items in terms of what we've got today. We've just had the UK retail sales, which were miles better than expected, but are very choppy at this time of the year. And we've got US inflation numbers at lunchtime, whereby if you look at the month-on-month changes, we're looking at something which is looking very benign, minus 0.1%. However, because of base effects, we are actually going to see the year-on-year rate jump, if that forecast is correct, from 0.7 to 1.3. Now, 1.3 obviously isn't particularly risky, but if we suddenly find ourselves in the 1.5%, 2% range, one does have to ask what it is precisely that we're worrying about in terms of disinflationary and deflationary forces.
Okay, well, let's go into the slides. There's plenty to look at. The first one, obviously, to remind everyone to download the TipTV Finance app on Apple, the FBI's favourite people, and on Android as well. And also to join the TipTV family on Twitter, while the company remains, Twitter remains an independent company, because that's also in a bit of a spiral at the moment. It's a new economy nightmare at the moment, isn't it? Anyway, TipTV, at official TipTV is the handle there on Twitter. Moving along to a bit of sort of charting or technical analysis here from Colin Twiggs on the major markets. Dow Global Index is not an index I'm particularly familiar with, but it doesn't make it any less exciting. It found support at 217, is rallying to test resistance at 290. Presumably, if we break 290, we'll head for the stars. But a recovery above 290 would indicate a more gradual downtrend than has been expected so far. So a sort of sideways, a gradual decline from the April peak of last year. Next up, we have the real Dow. And again, sort of similar thing there with a neckline resistance around 16,500. Breakout above that level would signal a retest of 17,000. But respect of 17,000 is likely, and we warn of a continuation of the primary downtrend. But not that sort of final like breakdown that the bears really want. And it's really more, it's more sort of a range, really, isn't it?
It is a range, and I think actually it's at the moment the only real question we've got is if we rally here, are we going to have a proper bear market rally? In which case, that squeeze could easily breach 17,500, and there'll be people saying, "Oh, it wasn't a bear market," and actually it'll prove to be a bear market, because bear market squeezes, or bear market rallies, one should say, are tend to be the most vicious phenomenon. I think people would prefer to have something a bit more choppy than this sideways churn, which appears to be emerging.
Right. I mean, the only thing I would add to that was with my sort of cynical hat, which is the only hat I actually wear normally, that the markets managed to once again short the indices enough to stop the Fed, the Fed only gave us one interest rate rise. But after that, we've got that taper tantrum again.
Absolutely.
Syndrome where the market, you know, any time the Fed wants to raise interest rates, somebody sells indices to death, destabilizes the stock market, then they can't do it anymore. And it's, you know, the tail wagging the dog there. Does the Fed have any control?
Well, none of the central banks have the sort of control that they try to persuade us that they have, whether it's over inflation or whether it's over asset prices.
What you can see is the only thing they really care about is the stock market. I mean, effectively, because when the stock market goes down, they're too scared to raise rates. And in fact, when it goes down, they start lowering rates.
Well, we're going to have to see about that. There's a certain interpretation being put on by markets on what the Fed is saying, basically that the Fed's running scared. As last 25 years, basically, what else would you expect? They've run out scared every other time. I think this time around it may be slightly different. So that makes that mid-March Fed meeting very, very important, particularly in terms of what they have that in terms of the dot plot of where they think how many rate rises are going to be. You would expect it to be reined in, but I don't think it's going to be reined in to the level that markets are at. So we've got one of these critical points where what central banks are expecting and what markets are pricing in are quite divergent, and there's plenty of room for one to move towards the other. Markets are assuming the Fed's going to have to move to them. I'm not 100% sure that that's going to be the case.
But the markets have at least been able to moderate what the Fed is going to do. So there could have been four hikes before, but because of this shorting activity, that you've got two instead. You'll have two instead.
I think a lot of it also one has to understand is a function of the way we've regulated market making out of the business. So we get these very sharp moves nowadays because no one's actually willing to make a market in a lot of things. And it doesn't really matter whether you're looking at equities or bonds or credit. Or even commodities. So the sharpness of some of the moves is to do with a complete loss of financial intermediation, and we go back
liquidity. So we're just like it's an ice rink type of situation. We're either here, we're either one end or the other end, and we don't really have anything in between.
Great example, very briefly from yesterday. Everyone looked at the big rally that we saw at the long end in Eurozone government bonds and said it's because of ECB easing expectations. No, it wasn't. It was actually due to a massive receiver on the sort of size which you worry that it's someone who got caught in the swaps market, and that dragged both the Eurozone government bonds up as well as US Treasuries.
It wasn't Deutsche Bank.
Well, who knows? I'm not going to name any names.
Nor am I. Because I hope it wasn't them. Right, S&P, this beautiful double bottom here, 1810, 1812, whatever it was, level there as well in October. It just, this is not, this, you know, we're looking at this, you would not say there's anything bearish here at all. Just a market in a range. Thank you very much. Buy at 1810, sell it at 1950, and if it breaks 1950, go back to 2100. I mean, just wonderful.
All I would expect is this sort of gentler sort of up and down that we saw there to become much more like this, i.e. more frequent fluctuations in the market in a big range. So, you know, we could be whipping backwards and forwards between 1800 and 2100, you know, over monthly cycles or two monthly cycles, whereas that would be sort of something over which we cycles that we'd normally see over, say, 6 months.
So the ice rink thing again. So the here, just nothing in between. Right, let's move along. German DAX, resistance line there towards 9,500, and the rally followed through up to 10,000, but not more than that at this stage because we've got that sort of slight breakdown. But it's done very well considering the pressures in the Eurozone and the ECB and stuff like that.
Well, the DAX is interesting in so far as it's quite similar to the UK FTSE 100. It's not really very representative of domestic demand in Germany. So while we've got the finance ministry telling us that German GDP is going to be strong because of domestic demand, you won't see that necessarily reflected in the DAX because it's full of exporters. And if the export part of the economy isn't doing well, then you don't expect the DAX to do well. Similarly, in the UK, the FTSE 100 is no measure or proxy for what people think about Brexit chances or what it implies for the UK economy. It tells us basically about mining, oil, and pretty much not much else.
Exactly. Well, let's go along to probably, hopefully, the FTSE 100. Yes, so resistance line there towards, 60, 50, something like that. We backed off that level once this week. We'll see how much the bears are squeezed higher on this, but this is, looks like a very tough line here. And with the Brexit situation, even though it's not really a FTSE thing, people have to sort of still have to think about whether they want to break that line, don't they? That resistance line.
And you then also look at it in terms of what's going on elsewhere, because we are spoilt for choice these days in terms of equity markets that we can invest in. And you look around and there are a lot of things which have been beaten up a lot harder than that, where you would probably say, actually, you know what? We've probably taken this too far. You know, some people might look at that and say, well, I think there's too much Brexit risks priced into it. I doubt it. And, you know, for the time being, when you see other markets which have been beaten to pulp much more strongly than that, you probably say, well, with that Brexit risk and the uncertainty, just the uncertainty, it's not actually making a call on what the implications for the UK economy would be, you'd rather go and dip your toe elsewhere.
OK, well, let's have a look at what we've got next, which is that, well, I don't think we're going to China, would you? Obviously, the People's Bank of China very keen on Chinese stocks, but is anybody else interested in them?
I think people are, but if you want great uncertainty, it's the fact that, you know, yes, we see the Chinese authorities do certainly seem to have the Chinese yuan under better control. The stock market, I have some doubts. They've got rid of a lot of the margin trading out of it.
Right.
So those big rallies, as we saw last year, are probably not likely to occur to the same extent. And therefore, I can imagine we're actually probably stuck in the range that we've got there over the last 3 months.
They're just happy to keep it on a level. Just there's no horrible surprises or nasty
Absolutely.
Surprises.
Absolutely, and having few, they would like to actually step out of the limelight. I think that's really the point, because they don't really want anyone, particularly not the US or Europe, blaming them for the woes of the global economy. At the moment, they are.
Okay. Next up is the Nikkei. Probably the worst. I mean, this has been very disappointing. You know, people have been long with Japan. It's been the sensible or the advised thing to be. Horrible top here. The strategy of the Bank of Japan in tatters.
It is in tatters, and I think the big problem here is people need to understand there's a huge difference between negative interest rates in Japan, where the banks have a huge amount of excess reserves, and negative interest rates in the Eurozone, where they have almost none. So when you cut interest on excess reserves, it has a much bigger impact, and particularly in Japan, where you're in a situation where the returns on government bonds are very poor. It looks like the economy is at best flatlining. Why would you be in a great rush to rush in here, particularly as Japanese investors at current levels of interest rates and current levels of the yen probably be looking abroad and saying, actually, my opportunity is to go abroad and rather liquidate some domestic assets and go abroad.
Right, we've got to rush through now because we could do the whole show today, I think, with the two of us. But volatility, we're expecting obviously not to go below 20. Hope we're probably back up to 30 at some point over the next trajectory on that.
Definitely.
Next slide, what's trending? The yen heading for its best month since the height of the global financial crisis in 2008. Global growth, those wonderful people, the OECD, calling for urgent action, as if we haven't been doing that for the last 6 or 7 years. 3.3% growth, now down to 3%. Presumably the reality will be about 2.5%. That's the way they normally do it. And Asda sales down by 5.8%. That was one of the heroes on the high street before it's become one of the laggards as well now. Mike's Morning Markets, profit taking in Asia, implied volatility on the pound, 6 month options pushed through 4 year highs, Brexit fears heightened. So people presumably are buying truckloads of puts just in case the pound breaks £1, $1.40, and people decide to vote for an exit on the EU, especially after Mr. Cameron's efforts. CPI coming in this afternoon from the US. We're looking for 1.3% versus 0.7% last time. Let's move along. Walmart, another hero hit hard. Bad Q4 there. Grocery giant reported fourth quarter sales down by 1.4% to $129.7 billion. They're really suffering now. Presumably people like Amazon are stepping into their space. We hope that they can work out what to do next. So there, obviously that's, we just mentioned Asda there with its worst set of quarterly results as well with a on that. EU leaders worked through the night in a farcical and sad attempt at drama. That's not my comments, although I agree with them. That is Nicole Elliott from the Investors Chronicle. Why they have to work overnight? I mean, that's terrible, really. You can't think properly if you haven't had enough sleep.
Well, exactly. And they're trying to cobble together something which is about the whole future of the EU. That seems a really unsensible
tactic. Yes, I think that's not very helpful. Next slide. Let's look at what Omkar Gobol from the FX Street says. Dow double bottom. Focus remains on oil. Neckline there, 16,500. We have to bet on whether it will break or not. Right, this is your slide, Mark.
Yes, that's WTI. The important thing is we've got expiry on Monday. We have come back a bit since I sent that chart through. We're around about the 3090 level. However, that matters not really that much. If we have a look at the next table, what we'll see is there's basically a $2.25 premium in the next front month for oil. So oil prices can gradually move up. And as oil prices gradually move up, we're in this situation where, in terms of the inflation numbers that we get coming in, we will gradually see an uptick in inflation. It's not inflation. It's just a whole load of base effects. Yeah. But as deflation and disinflationary threats are the thing which the Fed keeps on sort of trying to justify, as opposed to admitting freely that it's actually scared of markets rather than low inflation, we may get into a situation where markets turn around to the Fed and say, I thought you said there were a lot of disinflationary and deflationary effects around. And if that doesn't happen, then suddenly we've got the divergence trade back on again, and people will probably change their Fed rate hike expectations, and it'll probably change again as we go into the back end of the year, because the base effects work the other way around from June, July onwards. But it really underlines the point that I've been talking about in terms of volatility. All these things are likely just feed of an ever greater chop in terms of financial markets. And that really is where one, you know, I'd rather play volatility than directionality.
Okay, well, let's move along to the broker forecast, which I picked out. International Consolidated Airlines, Credit Suisse outperform. You still thought a bit late on this, but we'll see that they're perhaps not. And my friends at Deutsche Bank, who I really respect for their wonderful banking prowess and analysis, also going for a buy there at IAG as well. Next, maybe helped by the latest retail sales figures. And Stratex, a little company, a mining company, which I met somebody at an investor evening last night who said how wonderful it was. So I thought I'd mention that and people can do their own research. Onto the charts, International Consolidated bounced to the bottom of the range, 480. Presumably, it will get back up to the top of the range at £6.10 reasonably quickly. On to next, gap down there and gapped up here. That's an island reversal. Interesting that, you know, we might retrace at least part of the decline there. And obviously, the next has been a high street retailing god over the last decade and more. And then Stratex. Mining stocks of all shapes and sizes bouncing off the bottom, and this is also following that pattern. That is it for the opening segment. Mark Oswald from ADM Investor Services, thank you very much for coming in today. You are the financial Wikipedia. There's nothing about the area you do not know. We'll be back after the break.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.